Hey, Energizer, Spencer Jones here with another episode of the Jones and Four Show. And I am super excited to have you here today because we have an amazing, a special guest joining us to share something, to teach us something that I know many of you have asked me about because it's something that you struggle with. And I'll be perfectly honest, it's something I have struggled with before, and that is boundaries. So if you struggle with boundaries at all, or you're not sure how to make it happen, or you're feeling like you're pretty good, but want to make sure you're getting it fine-tuned, listen to this episode because we have the amazing, the awesome Rosemary Clark joining us, sharing boundaries and talking about it with us. So she allowed us in her boundary, at least, to talk about boundaries. And I'm very grateful. So Rosemary, thank you so much for being here, joining us.
Oh, so good to be here, Spencer. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. I am so excited to talk about this because this is something, as I mentioned, that I have struggled with before. And I know many of our energizers have struggled with in their journey, you know, of trying to live their lives to the max. So before we get into boundaries and all that stuff, let's get to know you a little bit more, your history and how you came to be an expert about boundaries and setting them and all that good stuff. So I'll pass the mic to you.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So my name is Rose. I'm from Love the Way You Parent, and I'm actually a parenting coach. And boundaries became really important to me because as a mom, you know, I started to realize like, holy crap, I have to have boundaries. Like, no, you can't hit your sister. And yes, we have to get out the door on time. And no, you can't eat candy all day, you know, all these things. But see, for me, what ended up happening was like the only way that I knew how to hold boundaries, the only way boundaries were modeled for me was that they were mean and controlling. And so I was turning into this mean and controlling mom when I was holding my boundaries. And I hated that. I didn't want to treat my kids that way. So I had to go way back to my childhood and figure out what the heck was going on there. And, you know, and go from there to kind of figure out like what, you know, what, where did this begin, this issue with boundaries, where did this begin? And then, you know, how the heck do I change this? So I'm holding boundaries that like actually make my kids feel safe instead of afraid.
Nice. Well, that's such a big thing because I don't know about you. Well, you just said, right? I was raised and says, don't do this, don't do that. They're boundaries, right? They're bumpers in the lane, as it were, stopping you from going outside. And yes, they're boundaries. And I'm sure my parents had the best of intent to make sure I felt was safe and all that, but it didn't necessarily feel that way. So I'm curious, especially as a parent, how'd that go for you? Because you said you noticed, oh, you can't have chocolate. No, you don't eat your sister. I mean, I don't understand why not, mom. But how did you transition from, okay, this is a negative outlook or feeling for the kids to a more positive and constructive one?
Yeah. So, you know, first off, I'm so glad that I stumbled on this parenting model that I now use, you know, daily. And I teach it to my clients. It's called Language of Listening. And it's this fantastic parenting model based on play therapy, positive psychology, and transformative coaching. And the thing was, is like, when I became a mom, you know, I had two under two, the yelling started, I felt completely out of control, you know, I didn't know what was going on. And I realized I needed some tools, and I didn't have tools, you know, and it was that whole thing of like, yes, I want to, you know, acknowledge my kids' emotions, I want to really be close to them. And so many parenting models teach that. And then there was this whole void of like, yeah, but like, acknowledging emotions only goes so far to get kids to listen, you know, to get them to be cooperative, right? Like, we still need to be the ones in charge, because when parents don't have boundaries, it actually becomes this like neglectful environment for the child. They need boundaries to feel safe. They need boundaries to kind of know how to function in the world. And the boundaries are so important. And when a parent can hold the boundaries in a positive way, then the child learns how to hold the boundaries in a positive way as well. And so, oh gosh, now I think I've forgotten the question already, Spencer.
No, it's all good. I like where this is going, because the kids reflect our, what reflect us as adults, right? And when I was a middle school, high school choir director, the kids reflected my energy, my beliefs, you know, especially if they were with me for a long time, and a parent, it's 10 times that, if not more, right? So when you set that boundary, you want to make it that positive experience. So how do you make it a positive one?
Yes. Okay, good. So really the main way Well, can I start off with like saying why we have an issue with boundaries?
Because I would love it.
This, okay. Because this is where it needs, like it connects to the question that you've asked, because this is, yeah, this is the way that, you know, we've been parenting, you know, for many generations now, this reward and punishment thing. And what it does is it actually gets the child, it got us as kids, and it gets our children now, if we continue in this way of parenting, it gets them disconnected from their boundaries. We've been disconnected from our boundaries. We've set that part of ourselves aside. And so that's why, that's the number one reason why it's really hard to hold boundaries. So if we as parents can learn how to hold boundaries and allow our children to hang on to their identity. So let me talk about what that really means, because allowing the child to hold on to their identity while we're holding boundaries is key. And it's key also because our boundaries are connected to our identity. So let me break this down for you, okay? The way that you figure out what your boundaries actually are is you just dive into what your likes and dislikes are. If you can be connected to what you like and what you dislike, if you can be connected to your own personal preferences and make those the most important thing in your life, it does two things. Okay. Gets you connected to your identity, being able to hold boundaries, but it also creates an environment where other people are okay to have their own likes and dislikes, where it's okay for them to have their identity and be connected to their identity and let their identity be the most important thing in their lives. This creates a very, very healthy, it's very healthy for relationships. It creates a very healthy environment in the workplace, at home, in society, all these things. And so what happened to us in our childhood with this whole reward and punishment thing is that what we did is we started to disconnect from our personal likes and dislikes, and we got really, really sensitive to our parents' likes and dislikes, or our teachers' likes and dislikes. Or if you think about being a teenager and needing to fit in, right, knowing what your friends liked and disliked, right, we set our own aside, often as a survival mechanism. And we get really, really, we set our radars to be really, really sensitive to, let's go back to the parents' likes and dislikes, right? And we're literally doing this to avoid punishment, to avoid bad things from happening. So we've actually done it from a place of fear. So all of a sudden, being connected to our own identity, being connected to our own preferences becomes dangerous, becomes unsafe for us. And we set these things aside. And then our brain is really, again, really, really keyed. Our radar is always looking for what does my parent like? What do they dislike? Right. And that starts to become the way that we make decisions in the world. Right. And then when you become an adult and you're out in the world and you're like, what the heck? What do I like? What do I dislike? What are my boundaries? We might fall back to what our parents' boundaries were, but those aren't our boundaries. That's not our identity. That's functioning from a place of survival. That's functioning from a place of fear. And instead of thriving, instead of really being able to enjoy your life. And if you think about likes and dislikes, it's pretty basic. It's a very basic thing. And it's definitely a way to enjoy your life, to be able to dive into really living your life to the fullest. Because, I mean, if you know what you like, you're going to go after more of what you like. And if you know what you dislike, you're going to start to remove those things from your life. But that's the first step. The first step of knowing boundaries and holding boundaries is to acknowledge and to know and to live from this place of like, I know what I like, I know what I dislike, and I'm going to make them the most important thing in my life. And once we're able to do that for ourselves, we're creating an environment where the other people around us, we're totally okay with them having their own likes and dislikes, right? And we can start to accept their identity. And we can do that with our kids when we're holding boundaries, or we can do it with anybody. This parenting model has been fantastic for my marriage, actually, and holding boundaries in my marriage and actually feeling closer to my husband and him feeling closer to me. Because I can be me and he can be him and we can be our authentic selves. And there's no like, there's no mixing up of it. There's no enmeshment there. There's no like who you are is a problem for me. Like, it's just like, well, he doesn't like this thing or he likes this thing. Right. And if I just don't like something, you know, I don't like picking laundry up off the floor. Doesn't mean that my kids or my husband are bad people or that I'm mad at them or anything. I just don't like it, you know? And then it takes the drama out of it and all the emotion.
That is freaking incredible. Like I love that whole description of it and the analogies that you shared with it, because for me and how I look at life and what I teach, right, to live your life to the max is to really accept yourself as you, right, to love yourself as you, who you are, without judgment and without judging others. Yes. That's a hard thing to do, right? Because you're going, okay, yeah, sure, I've made mistakes before or whatever, but I'm me. And then with discovering who you are and loving who you are, you need to know, well, what do I like? What don't I like? And in, you know, what I do with my clients, we work through helping them find their priorities, what's their purpose, all that stuff, right? So they have a direction. And all that comes into play is exactly what you're saying. What do I like? What do I dislike? Because we have all the constructs of what we, and especially fear-based, put in our lives before, so we didn't get disciplined in any which way, shape, or form that happened, right? Whether it's from our parents, our teachers, our friends, or even ourselves, right? Putting in those social constructs in our minds. So we go, okay, well, let's back up. Let's see who we really are, love ourselves for who we are, and be okay with that. And then being okay with us as who we are, let's then be okay with other people. So your husband, right? My wife, for instance, I'm okay. If she doesn't like that, that's great. She doesn't have to like this. If I love it, right? That's okay. She's welcome to have her own opinion. Other people are welcome to have their own opinion, do those things and be okay with that. And that for me has really opened up and helped our marriage, helped my friendships with oh my God, everybody really. And just my pure enjoyment of life. I'm not stressed. I'm not angry or frustrated nearly as often, very rarely, as a matter of fact, because I just go, I'm okay. I'm taking care of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Boundaries are, they're so interesting because really talking about them in regards to your likes and dislikes, like it seems so basic. It almost seems too simple, but when you really start to dive into it, it does lay this incredibly strong, simple foundation. Like, you know what? Like I love red licorice. I absolutely love red licorice. Okay. Black licorice, not so much, you know, and somebody can't come and tell me like, no, you love black licorice, Rose. You absolutely love black licorice. Like, no, it's just the way it is. I don't particularly enjoy the flavor, but right. Darn it all. I love red licorice, you know, and it's so simple. It's so incredibly simple, you know, but when we can just accept our boundaries, it's just the way that things are. It's just the way, so, I just don't like it.
Right. But you just have to be willing to accept it, open it up and be willing to. So a couple questions for you. One, I just want clarity. And I think I know what you meant, but I could see myself being like, or when you said, I'm like, I'm not so sure. I just want to get clarity. And that is, you said, remove ourselves from the boundary, right? Or the oh my gosh, now I totally, I got talking and I forgot. But like you're disconnected. That's the word. Disconnect from the boundary. Yeah. What does that mean? Like I heard that, I'm like, that's awesome. What does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So I can talk about my own childhood, for example. Like I didn't even know that I had an abusive childhood, not really, until I burned out at work in my early 30s and I was sitting on a therapist's couch. I was brand new married, like just married like 2 months before. And she's like, you know, like, why are you here? What's going on? And we started talking about, well, I'm just trying to make, you know, to prove that I'm worth the space I take up in the world. She wanted to know why I was working so many overtime hours, you know, why are you working so hard? What's going on? And as we talked, she was able to reflect back to me. She's like, you had an extremely abusive childhood, like, you know, and so to talk about this from the place of, you know, setting aside these boundaries to keep ourselves safe, setting aside our connection to our identity. Again, it's that whole idea of like what kept me safe was being like really, really aware, like having my radar set to be sensitive to picking up on what my parents liked and disliked. So I could make sure I was doing all the things that they liked and make sure I was avoiding all the things that they disliked. So I could keep myself safe, right? To keep myself from the spankings and whatever else was going on. Okay. And so, but it wasn't so safe for me to really be aware of what I liked and disliked because my parents didn't seem to like those things. Right. And so I just really set them aside to keep myself safe. And this is true for so many people. You don't have to have had an abusive childhood, although, you know, 2/3 of our population has experienced childhood trauma. Most people have no idea that they've experienced childhood trauma. But it's just, again, it's this whole idea of connection. And maybe to talk about it in a different way is to talk about how some parents, sometimes the way that parents will, you know, relate with their kids and try to get their kids to listen and be cooperative, because again, you got to be the one in charge. You do have to be the one in charge, right? And so sometimes what happens is a parent will hold back their connection. They'll hold back their relationship from the child. They'll remove closeness to get that child to behave, to get that child to be obedient. But that connection is what actually the animal brain, our animal brain, that connection with our parents is like what tells us we're okay, that we're going to survive this thing. Right. And so removing that connection or giving punishment or whatever that's happening there, right. That puts the child literally in a place where they're fearing for their life. And so again, their likes and dislikes, they just have to become unimportant so that their whole focus, so that their radar can really be set to what their caregivers are liking and disliking, so that that child can really keep themselves self-controlled and avoid the punishment and make sure that that connection remains. Again, it's the same with teenagers, right? This is why teens will like be very aware of what their friends like and want to make sure, like, you know, how are my clothes? How's my hair? Are my friends going to like it? It's very rarely like, do I like my hair? Do I like my clothes? Do I like the right. sports I play? Like whatever it is, right? It's this idea of like, I need to be connected. I need to be connected in order to feel like I'm going to survive. And then the whole problem with that nasty cycle is, but you're not showing up as your authentic self. So you're not getting authentic connection. And then it's just always feeling not quite satisfying, you know?
Well, that's huge. All humans thrive on connection. We all need that connection in some way, shape or form. Some more need it more than others, but we all need a connection in our lives. And I totally agree. I think back to my childhood and especially teenage years, man, I changed myself so much just to try to get on an in crowd to find those friends. And now I think about this and I'm going to generalize, I would assume, and this is an assuming, right? So you know what that all does, but that most childhoods were similar to mine in the sense that, well, we were teenagers. We tried fitting in and doing what our friends did so we fit in, or making sure we did what our parents or teachers said so we didn't get disciplined. And that was for our safety. If I look back on it, like, okay, they're trying to keep me safe. But I could definitely see, and I know certain instances of my childhood with my parents that did not help me in the long run mentally, right? I had those blocks I need to work through. But how can we then, I mean, okay, as an adult, we can work through finding our true authentic self now, which is huge, but how can we make sure that we are not stopping others and but helping and support them and love them, you know, like let's say our family or friends, like, here, I'm going to give you the space with these boundaries that are safe for you, but also safe for me. How do we do this?
Yeah, yes. And you've kind of asked this question and I haven't quite answered it yet. You were asking before, how do we, you know, create this safety for our kids? And so what I'll do is I'll take you through the steps of language of listening. It's three easy steps. And again, it works with my kids. It works with me. It works with my husband. It worked when I was working in a retail shop. My husband and I were running a retail shop. We just closed it down a few months ago and jumped into some new careers. But all these places, this works. And maybe what I'm going to start with, let's start with a story about a toddler who's having a meltdown because they got the blue cup instead of the red cup. Okay.
I'll tell you, the blue cup is the bomb though. I'll tell you.
They didn't get the blue cup, you know, and they're so upset. Right. And so as parents, again, like what happens is our brain starts to go into overdrive. Like, I don't want my kid freaking out about just a stupid color of a cup. Like, what a dumb thing to be upset about, right? They need to be more resilient. They need to, you know, or this is embarrassing or whatever crazy thoughts come into our heads, right? And the thing is like that child is just expressing their likes. They want the blue cup. They got the blue cup instead of the red cup.
I can't remember. They wanted the red.
They wanted the red. Okay. So they love red, right? They love red so much. And you know, the mom doesn't want the child screaming and yelling, or maybe let's say they threw the cup. Let's say they crossed a boundary by throwing the blue cup because they didn't want the blue one. They wanted the red one, right? And so what we do in language of listening is we start off by connecting. We keep things safe, right? We start off connecting with a very simple tool called Say What You See. And Say What You See, the whole point of it is to get yourself into the other person's head, to start to see the world through their eyes. And you do that by just saying what you see, right? So, you know, I gave you a cup of milk and you threw it across the room, you know, right. And to note then what the person wants, you know, you wanted the red cup. It was the red cup that you wanted. So, and that's just to start you off, right? So do you just like, this kid is mad. He threw his cup, you know, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it. And he doesn't like the blue cup. He wants the red cup. So we can allow that child to maintain their want. Right. And by maintaining their want, it doesn't mean the person has to get what they want. It just means we validate. You're okay to want that. And we literally like getting to know your kids' likes and dislikes and validating those is huge. Of course you wanted the red cup. That's your favorite. You didn't want the blue cup. You wanted the red one.
Right.
Right. You know, and you threw your cup. Cups aren't for throwing. When we mention boundaries, if we're going to bother mentioning boundaries, we'll keep them very objective. Not, we won't say you can't throw your cup, right? Because it's like, yeah, Ken, I just did. Right. Same with right. like, you know, to an adult, you know, you like, let's say I'm at working at my retail shop and somebody tries to return something outside of the return window. You know, I don't say you can't return this. It feels much more gentle, or it feels much easier to accept for that person to just be like, you know, returns don't happen after 2 weeks. We don't return money. So it's not personal. It's not their fault. There's no blame involved. The person doesn't feel powerless, you know, right, or anything like that, right? It's just keeping it really, really objective. So, and cups aren't for throwing, you know? And then we just bring in the can-dos tool. It's just called can-do. It's very simple. And you just let the child know what they can do. You know, nice. Or actually what we do is we invite them into problem solving, which is really good. That's the first step. And we just say, must be some way you can show mama that you, that you're unhappy about the blue cup without throwing it.
Mm.
Right. So it's okay for them to say they're unhappy about it. It's okay for them to have a different want. It's okay for them to have this dislike of the blue cup. And I'm not okay with them throwing it. There must be something you can do to let me know that you didn't want the blue cup.
I think that's huge. I'm just writing down all these notes here because I'm just soaking this all in. So like you first, just to recap, right? You connect with them. So you say what you see, right? You threw the blue cup. You're not blaming them. You're not judging. You're just stating what you see. Like, oh, I see you are, or I didn't say you are upset, but I said, we'll keep with the cup example. I saw that you threw the blue cup. And when you validate them, but it doesn't mean necessarily that you give them what they want or what they desire necessarily, depending, right? It could be, but you validate them. I see that. Oh, that's right. Of course, you don't like the blue cup. You wanted the red one, right? Something along those lines. And well, throwing cup is not an option, right? So then you say, if you do mention a boundary, it's not accusatory. It's not judging. Well, you can't throw this. You don't do this. It's more, well, cups aren't for throwing, or these clothes can't be returned after this date. It's not a, you made a mistake, where all of a sudden then their walls and defense goes up. It's more, you say it so their walls still can stay down. And then you ask them, well, okay, if you didn't like the blue cup, how else can you tell me besides throwing it? Or how else can you express it, right? Is that, am I getting this?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And like, you know what? Sometimes people just do need to throw things.
Right.
Sometimes they do. Nice. Like our anger's got to get moved through our body. This is part of holding boundaries as a parent, right? Like all emotions are okay. All emotions are acceptable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and let's bring that into marriage. Let's say that there's a husband and a wife, and the wife is extremely angry at her husband and she's screaming in his face, right? The boundary can be like, I'm not for yelling at. And if you need to yell, you can go in the bathroom and shout at the shower head and pretend it's me. And when you could speak in a calm voice, come back, because we need to talk about this.
Right.
But I'm not for yelling at.
That's huge. Wow. I never even thought about it like that before.
Yeah.
That's huge. So let's transition this to ourselves, for boundaries for ourselves, as opposed to like working with another person or kid. Let's say, okay, how do we first discover what we like? We have to do that thing first, I assume, right? Discover what we like and don't like. Is that the very first step?
Yes. So the very first thing I do with my clients when they work with me is I get them to sit down, take 20 to 30 minutes on your own, make a list of everything that you can think of that you like everything, things like people that you like, food that you like, activities that you like, places that you like, there's no boundaries around what you can like, right? I mean, you can like anything, right? And then also write out everything that you can think of that you dislike. And it's usually 20 to 50 items per list. So it's just really important to start to do that. And then the next thing I get my clients to do actually is to start to do, say what you see with themselves when anything happens, when they react to anything in their life. And then just note to themselves, you liked that, you didn't like that, right? So like, let's say a glass falls on the floor and breaks. Right. So you can be like, a glass fell on the floor and broke. You didn't like that. Or maybe you did like it because Aunt Martha gave you that glass and you felt like you couldn't throw it out, but you hate that damn glass. And it finally broke and you're so happy.
You know? Love that analogy.
Right. Like it really doesn't matter if you like it or dislike it, as far like there's no right or wrong there. There's just knowing yourself and accepting yourself. Right. And then this is how we get our radar set to paying attention to what we like and what we dislike, and to not feel drama over it.
One thing I think a lot of people struggle with, and I know I have at times, is let's take the glass from Aunt Martha, right? I feel like I should be upset about this, but instead I'm actually happy. So I need to, because I didn't like the freaking glass, right? I, whatever, hated that thing, didn't like her, but whatever. And so it broke now. I'm happy, but yet I feel like I should be sad, right? My social constructs and the bumpers and boundaries that I've been taught before tell me I should be sad or angry or frustrated, not happy about this. When those situations come up, when we have that discord, what do we do?
Oh, so I love that you brought up shoulds. I love that you brought up shoulds. Okay. So let me take you through this little kind of ladder that we have in language of listening. So we start with our likes and dislikes. Mm-hmm. These are our identity. They're our boundaries. They just are what they are. Then the escalation, there's an escalation of likes and dislikes into wants. Now wants are basically, they're a great escalation because they're just that motivation and that push for us to go after what we like and to remove what we dislike, right? The things that we want and the things that we don't want. The escalation after that, this escalation starts to get a little heavier and a little more questionable, which is the shoulds. Mm-hmm. And what I do with my clients to get them to de-escalate out of shoulds is just to get them, do you want to be sad that you broke the glass? Nice. Is that, do you want to be sad? Because where is that sad coming from? That sad is actually probably coming from fear of being rejected by your family because you don't have enough respect for Aunt Martha or whatever. Do you know what right. I mean? Like it's just so, and it's just this intense, like accepting of yourself and accepting of your emotions. Our emotions, I love this. Our emotions are simply there for adapting.
Ooh,
our emotions help us to adapt to situations. They're not wrong. There can be boundaries around the way, again, around the way we express emotions. We talked about, you know, if a wife is screaming at her husband's face, mm-hmm. she can be mad. There's nothing wrong with being angry, and her anger is all about her.
Right.
If I ever get angry with my husband, it's not about him and it's not about what he did. It's about my likes and dislikes. That's mine. And if I can own that, I am so empowered because I'm not stuck being a victim to the way that he behaves and the choices that he makes. I get to be mad and my anger tells me that my boundaries have been crossed.
Wow.
Right? And they're helping me to adapt. Isn't that huge?
That
right?
is but mind blowing. Like I'm just listening to this going, holy crap. Like I've seen it from different perspectives, but I've never heard it put like that. Or at least the revelation to me going, oh my God, like when they do something I don't like or whatever, and I get angry, it's not them. They didn't anger me at all. It's not them at all. It's all me. It's all on me, which is something I have believed, but now just seeing it from that fresh perspective going, oh, now this just means I crossed a boundary for me and I need to evaluate it and go, I'm not going to judge them for it. I just need to evaluate, see what do I do from here? I like this. Oh, I didn't like this. And then work through why and solving that. Go yell at the shower head or whatever I need to do. Because, you know, I don't think any human being is deserving of being shouted or yelled at in any way, shape or form like that. That's interesting. Well,
and then you, that's when you use the tools on yourself. What can I do? Right. I'm so angry right now. He doesn't want me screaming in his face. What can I do? What can I do to move my anger through my body? Because it has to be done, right? Anger is this huge release of hormones. You know, they have to be moved through. They need to be released. Right. And so how can I do this while maintaining my relationship? Because my husband is not okay with me screaming in his face.
Hey, are you ready to crush it? To go after your dreams and goals and live your life to the max? Well, of course you are. That's why you're here listening or watching to the Jones and Four show. And I appreciate that. Thank you so much. But sometimes we still get stuck, right? These podcasts, this show is great, but that's not everything sometimes. Sometimes we need a little more. And you know what? I get that. What helps me and what has helped me and continues is a community. And surrounding myself with people who are amazing, who are like-minded, like me, going after goals, achieving big things, and pushing themselves and others to be their best. Wouldn't it feel amazing to be surrounded by a community like that? To be surrounded by people who are like you, who have big goals and dreams, and they're going for them. Not only are they going for their goals, they're helping and encouraging you to go after yours. Well, if that sounds interesting, if that sounds fun, if that sounds like a community you would love to be part of, well then come check out Spencer's Energy Hub. That's right, I have our membership community, we have a membership community that's here for you. I say we because we are the energizers, just like you. We energize each other to be our best. We have monthly rock star interviews, right, where we interview masters in their field. We have weekly trainings. We meditate every week. as a community. And you can hop and join us. You get special access to me, along with an incredible community of people. So if you are ready to level up, if you are ready to be a rock star and crush your goals while being surrounded by an incredible and amazing community, check out Spencer's Energy Hub. All you have to do is go to spencersenergyhub.com and check it out. Or if you want, just head over to my website, www.spencermjones.com, and check out the hub. We would love to have you inside. All right, back to your show. So how, okay, and this seems to go against a lot of what, how we're raised, or a lot of what we see in society and movies and commercials and blah, 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 social media, right? That, oh, well, it's okay to shout. We'll just keep this example, right? To that we're going to shout at our spouse because, well, that's what I see. I'm angry. They did something that angers me. They need to know that they angered me and that they crossed this boundary. So, but you're saying, no, 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 don't do that, because your anger is because they crossed one of your boundaries. So you're causing your anger yourself, not necessarily them. But then you do those steps with yourself to say, okay, why don't you like this? What's another way to express yourself? But then that, you know, if they don't know that they crossed that boundary, they don't know any better. So then after you've calmed down, after you let that anger move through you, is that then when you have that conversation of going, hey, when you said this, my body, I responded like this because you crossed this boundary with me. Again, not blaming judgment, not throwing blame or anything like that, but just going, how can we address this in the future? Or how can we move through this?
Yeah, well, that more objective way of talking to them is just say, I didn't like it when you, not you made me feel, or, you know, like all these different language pieces that are out there. But here's what you do. Okay, here's what you do is we use the tools with ourselves. You go and you say what you see with yourself. You speak to yourself in the second person using the word you, and you get all your frustration and all your complaints out, because you can say whatever you want. All of that junk that you know want to scream at your spouse or scream at your kids or whatever, but you don't want to scream at them because you want to respect the relationship. You want to maintain the relationship. Okay. Or maybe you do want to scream at them and that's okay too. Right. And right. you just coach yourself through it. You just say what you see. You hate it when he does that. Freaking makes you want to rip his head off, you know, like just get it all out. Okay. Because it's all just messages. You're not actually going to rip his head off, right? It's just, they're just all messages telling you like how strong you feel about this. It's trying to get your attention. And once you get to the point where you've said enough, say what you see, that you're literally like, you have a physical reaction. You want to self-coach and say what you see to yourself, get all your complaints out, all your thoughts, all your feelings, until you have a physical reaction. So either you're nodding your head or you're crying. That there's some sort of a physical reaction. Then you start realizing what is it that you actually want in that moment? What is it that you want? So like you want him to, I don't know, you want him to pick up the laundry, or you want him to, you know, whatever it is that you want, right? You figure it out. What do you want? And it's okay to want whatever you want. And your wants are so important because they're connected to your identity again, right? They're just an escalation of your likes and dislikes. And Spencer, before we get off here, I really would love to talk to you about how to help kids deal with disappointment.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like, you know, like that, I think it's one of the most important pieces of parenting, but also again, it's the way our society deals with disappointment is crazy. Anyway, say what you see with yourself. Part of the say what you see is what the heck do you want? And once you figure out what you want, then you go into can do's. Well, how can you get that thing? How can you get that thing, right? And that's really, really important. And I think a really important maybe distinction I can make here too is between rules and boundaries. Your boundaries are your likes and dislikes. Your boundaries don't change. Your rules are a way to express a way that the people in your life can respect your boundaries.
Love that.
Okay. And the rules sometimes change. So I'll use a Sharpie marker example. I hate it. I don't like it when there's Sharpie marker on my furniture, on my walls. Okay. So I have rules in my house. I have rules in my house that when a child finds a Sharpie marker, they bring it to an adult, and that Sharpie markers are only for paper. Those are the rules that we have in our house. Now, Susie down the street might say, I don't want Sharpie markers in my house. She may have the same boundary as me that she hates Sharpie marker on her wall and her furniture, but her rule might be no Sharpie markers in the house, because she just doesn't want to deal with the possibility of it even happening, right? And so, and the rules can adjust and change. Like maybe when Susie's kids get older, then she's okay with some Sharpie markers in the house, right? And she's going to shift her rules to look maybe more like mine, or maybe Sharpie markers are only for cardboard boxes in her house. That's the only place that she's, you know, because then it doesn't leak through the paper onto the table or whatever, right? And so And so the rules are like the way that we can express that people, you know, can respect our boundaries. And it's the rules that the people can agree to or not agree to. They don't agree to or not agree to our boundaries because our boundaries just are the way things are. Right. I'm not going to change the fact that I don't like it when people leave their laundry on the floor. I just don't like picking it up. Like, pick it up. It's yours. Pick it up yourself. Right. You know, you know? And some people don't mind picking up laundry.
It's true. God bless them. I don't understand them, but go them. I love the distinction between boundaries and rules. Boundaries are your likes, dislikes, and then the rules are the ways that you can have people respect your boundaries, right? The things that they follow to respect them. So let me give you, we'll chat about boundaries here in a little bit. I love that. Disappointment.
Disappointment, yeah.
But a quick question about, well, we'll see where it goes. How it might be quick, might not be, about boundaries. So let's say, we'll do a random example. Let's say one of my family members, we were okay before, but now, you know, because a person might, let's say my mom passed away and now we've argued, we've got into it and I just can't stand being around them. Right. It's frustrating for where I am in life. They don't seem to respect me, my wishes, all that stuff. And now my boundary that I feel like I should set up, or the rules, I suppose, in this case, I set up are I can only talk with them for maybe an hour a week, because that's before I get overloaded and, you know, can't handle them anymore. So like, how can we work through that? Because let's say I feel like I should have a good relationship with them. They are family. How do I work through all this?
Okay, so you're wondering about like the emotional side of it and all the shoulds that come up and feeling okay with making this decision, right? And right. So here's this thing that I learned from Language of Listening in my training that I absolutely love it so much. You get to decide the distance from which to love people best.
Oh my God, I love that.
Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible.
It's pure gold, right? Like, this is the way that you can love that person best, is if you put a maximum of 1 hour a week on them and you're still loving on them, because when it goes over an hour and you just can't take it anymore, all of a sudden you're frustrated, you're angry, you don't even want to spend that hour with them next week, right? All these things come up.
Mm.
But when you decide the distance, so like, you know, with me and my husband, there is a very little distance there. We don't like spending time apart. You know, it's best for me to be really close to him. It's best for me to be really close to my children, right? My parents, who sadly were abusive and continue to be abusive, I get to decide the distance from which I love them best, right? So I have limited, you know, the phone conversations I have with them. I have limited these things. And it allows me to just have a better feeling in the relationship. It allows me to feel better about who they are. It allows me to maintain the good memories and focus on those, you know, and those things are important. And then I'm not constantly in this state of like anger and sadness and wanting to push away from them, you know?
I think that's huge. And I'm right there with you. So for my parents, the language of listening for that and to keep that boundary and safe is I actually stopped talking to them 15 years ago because of abuse and all the other stuff that goes into it. Yep. And so while as sad as that is, I mean, my life got happier and better. And now, I mean, it took a couple of years to work through it, right? Number of years. But now I go to the point, I still love them, right? I still love them. I appreciate them, all they did for me. And I know that, okay, if I had a conversation with them, I mean, I don't know 100%, obviously, but if I had a conversation with them now, that maybe that would be harder and would bring up those things I have to work through. But now I still love you. I still appreciate you. And so that goes for anyone. Now, my parents would be an extreme example, while others could be like yours. Like, nope, I limit our phone conversations, or I limit my time with them in person. And that's, I love that, that you get to determine that length of love, you know, how much you can, what distance, I can't use words apparently, what distance you love them from. I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah. The distance that you love them from the best.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So let's transition here into disappointment, for kids, but also us, right? Cause we all struggle with disappointment at times. We don't always get what we want. Gosh, darn it. I wish we would, but maybe that's a good thing. So let's talk disappointment here.
Yeah. And so like with disappointment, you know, what ends up happening a lot in our society is we try to change people's mind about what they want, or we try to get them, you know, to accept things you know, so that they're feeling better. And we do it from the purest place of wanting to really, you know, support people and help them feel better. So let's say that you lost a family member, right? Somebody died. You know, what are the typical things that people will often say in society? Sometimes they'll say they're in a better place or they're not in pain anymore, these types of things, right? And that's okay. Some people find those statements comforting and some people don't, you know, and being able to dive into like, what's the emotion that's showing up? How bad does this suck? You know, how much does this hurt?
Right.
You know, being able to dive into that and acknowledge like you want them back. You wish this had never happened. You know, acknowledging those things is so, so important. So when we talk about it from a kid's side or, you know, from a parenting point of view, let's say your child comes up to you. It's 3 weeks before Christmas and they're like, Mom, there's this new game system. I really like, this has got to be on my Christmas list. Like, this is what I want. You know, as parents, you know, again, we can start to feel very uncomfortable and we might want to try to change the child's mind. You don't want that. I don't want you to have that. You spend too much time on it. It's too expensive. Like, you know, like, and we try to change their mind. But think about it. What if it went like this? What if it, you know, say what you see. You're telling me that you would love to have that game system and that my budget's already all spent for Christmas. Must be something you can do to get what you want. Right. So that allows the child to hang on to their want, which is connected to their identity.
Right.
Right. And it opens up. So let's just say I live in Canada. So lots of snow here. Okay. So let's just say that that kid is like, yeah, must be something I can do to get what I want. What if that all of a sudden that, you know, 14-year-old boy decides he's going to start going around to the neighbor's houses and going, hey, I can shovel your driveway for, you know, $5 every time it snows or whatever. Like, do you need someone to shovel your driveway? And next thing you know, this kid has created his own business.
Right.
To help him get what he wants.
Exactly.
You know, and he's empowered. So, you know, when we try to change people's minds about what they want, they become disempowered. We start to remove, you know, the power that they have, their feelings of capability, all these things. But if we just keep possibilities open, the way we say it in language of listening, you keep the possibilities open for your child. The example I like to give is, you know, let's say your son comes home from school and he's almost crying because Johnny didn't invite him to his birthday party, you know, and you're just like, why is my kid crying? They shouldn't be, this is such a silly thing to cry about. It's not okay to cry, especially not for boys, you know, all these things, you know? And so again, we try to change, like, you don't even like Johnny.
Right.
Like, that kid is mean to you. Like, you know, you don't want to go to his birthday party. Like, this is not a thing to cry about. You know, that's the way that our society typically would handle that. Language of listening is we'd be like, look how important this is to you. The tears are coming. That's how important this is to you. And like, what does that kid want? That kid just wants connection. That kid wants to feel included. Like, you just want to feel included, you know,
right.
Must be something you can do to feel included this weekend. Must be something you can do to hang out with your friends this weekend and feel included. And then maybe your son's going to say, well, the party's on Saturday. Can I have the guys over on Sunday? And maybe mom's having a dinner party Sunday night. She doesn't want her house full of a bunch of boys all afternoon. Right. And so then she's got a boundary there. Well, you know, that doesn't really work for me. How about I drive you and your friends to the skate park on Sunday afternoon. I'll be the driver. I'll be the chaperone. I'll stay with, because I don't really want kids in my house, extra kids in my house on Sunday because I got this dinner party. And then, you know, like, right. There's empowerment for everybody. Everybody can keep moving forward. And I think that's really that keeping that forward motion and allowing kids to meet their needs. I mean, that's really the big thing. And I haven't spoken about this, but like, one of the core premises of language of listening says that, like, all behaviors are driven by three healthy needs: experience, connection, and power. All behaviors are driven by those three healthy needs, which means that all behaviors have a good intention. People are just trying to meet their needs. It doesn't mean you like all behavior. Doesn't mean all behavior is healthy, but it just means that people are trying to meet their needs. And so what you do with your boundaries is and with kids, really, our job is to kind of create this box, create these boundaries for them and let them meet their needs however they want to within the boundaries. As long as they're within the boundaries, they need to meet their needs in their way. Mom or, you know, or dad and the kid, they need to like the way the boundary or the way they need to like the way the needs being met. Okay. And so when I say that mom needs to like, or dad needs to like the way the needs being met, it falls within their boundaries. It falls within those walls, and the kid needs to like it because it actually has to feel satisfying for them.
Right. Otherwise, right? It goes back to our childhood where I'm trying to please my parents. Right. And they're doing, or I'm in fear. And so I disregard my own wants, needs, desires, all that.
Yes. Yeah.
And what I heard when you were saying that was, that, okay, you can't go to the, it's really important you to go to this birthday party, but you weren't invited, and that, well, what can we do? I feel like you want to hang out with friends, right? To have that connection so you can have, oh, Sunday won't work. So instead of just saying, oh, Sunday doesn't work and cutting it off there, you offered an alternative, right? You offered an example and thinking of, okay, you have this need and now we're going to put it in this, in our boundaries, right? For our house, for our family. Maybe they're struggling to come up with ideas, or you can even offer just suggestions. But the big thing is to not be tied to any which one of those per se and try to force it. You're doing it in a non-judgmental way, in a way that's, I'm just laying these out as options, as thoughts. And then if you come up with something else, great, right? When we can have that discussion. But really, like, a lot of this conversation boils down to with boundaries is loving you for you, loving others for themselves without judgment, and being willing and accepting of, these are my boundaries. Here's how I can love you. And here's how we can have this positive relationship with whatever that distance is, right? Whether it's talking for a person hour a week or no Sharpies in the house, whatever that is.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're literally, you know, that other person is simply trying to meet a need. Again, it's the intentions, they're always good. And if we come from a place like, if their intentions are good, you know, they're just trying to meet a need. Needs got to get met, you know, so you get on their team. I mean, you get on their team by using say what you see and getting in their brain, figuring out what they want, acknowledging what they want, right? You get on your kids' team, you get on your spouse's team, you get on your customer's team, you know, you're on their team, and then you problem solve with them. No, but when people are seen and understood, when it's okay for them to want what they want, when it's okay for them to feel how they feel, and this is true for us when we're coaching ourselves with the say what you see for yourself, right? When all of those things are accepted, emotions, reactions, when they're accepted, it's okay that you want this. It's okay that you like this. It's okay that you don't like this. We automatically, as human beings, turn into problem solvers. Automatically. When it's okay to cry, the crying usually stops pretty quick because all of a sudden it's okay to adapt.
Right.
And again, the tears are simply about adapting. That's all tears are about. So if we're holding back tears, and if we're keeping our kids from crying, they're not going to be able to become problem solvers. They're going to get stuck there. You know, they're not going to be able to adapt. And that's what it's about. Accept the emotion. Again, we might not like the way it's being expressed, but we accept the emotion, right? And then that just opens up the doors so that we can keep moving forward and get that need met in a way that's appropriate.
I love it. I want to throw a challenging question for you to wrap it up here.
Oh boy.
Okay. And it's probably not a challenging question to you, but I'm thinking of this. So I don't have kids, just so we're upfront about that. But I could see this as being a teacher and as a parent. So let's say your kid wants something, right? But it's something that's dangerous, something that doesn't not only goes against your boundary, but like your personal beliefs. And just, let's say it's a kid and they're still working at forming their full on beliefs and what's right, the whole like safety part of this, right? Like, I don't know. I can't think of a great example right now. But how can we help them within a boundary? Because we have to set that boundary and go, nope, you can't do this because this could kill you, right? Or harm you significantly. And yet still be willing to, I see you, I hear you, and let them fill their need. Because that almost seems like my brain goes, I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So like, and that's it. Like, it goes down to like, what need are they meeting? Cause it's really the need that's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So let's say whatever this thing is the child wants is actually meeting their need for experience. Okay. Experience is like, I've got this body. What can I do with it? I've got this life, you know, like what are the limits of this life? Like what can I do with this life? And just to give an example, at the beginning of the pandemic, when there were big lockdowns and mm-hmm. where I was living in Nova Scotia, Canada, at the time, there were some pretty serious lockdowns. We weren't even allowed to go to parks.
Oh, wow.
We couldn't go to the library. We couldn't go, like, you got fined like $1,000 if you went to like a public park. It was nuts. Okay. And so like the kids were like squirrely. There was no school. There was like, right. And so what did I find? I started finding my jewelry in bits and pieces all over the place. And I started finding shampoo smeared on the bathroom wall. And like, it's because kids need to explore. They need to experience. They need to experiment, right? They right. just need that. But I was not okay with my jewelry in bits and pieces. It was literally getting broken. And right. Dried shampoo on the wall is not an easy thing to clean off, you know? So I was not okay with that. I was not okay. And it was that my kids like really like this is what they wanted. This is what they felt like they needed to do. So what were some other ways that I could provide for them or open up for them? What were the possibilities I could open up for them to meet their need for experience because they needed it? You know, so maybe this kid that you're talking about, this example, maybe they want to go bungee jumping and mom is like, no way.
Right.
We are not doing like when you're 18, when you're 19, you can make that decision. You're 15 or 16. You are not this. I'm not okay with this. I just right. not like, you know. And so what is some fun thing that that child could do that would meet their need for experience? Maybe rock climbing. Maybe mom's okay with rock climbing because it's a little more controlled or whatever. And then the other thing is that it's empowering them into the future. Mm. So at 15, I'm not going to let you do that. And when you're 18, you get to choose. Letting them know when they can have something, letting them know when they can have the choice, right? Even this whole thing, like when your kid doesn't like your boundaries. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're the mom, when you're the dad, you get to decide. Right? So it's not taking away their power 100%.
I remember like my dad saying, well, when you own your house, you can have your own rules. And it kind of reminds me of that, right? Like under my house, it's my rules type thing. And, but I could see that as a positive to some degree, but also for me as a kid, that was a very negative thing to say, you know? And I think part of it is, it's almost this fine line where you want to make sure that your child or the other person, adult, whoever it is, a human being, wants to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to know that they're cared for and connected with you. And, you know, for example, bungee jumping, like, you know, that's for me, I'm not comfortable with that. And because that doesn't seem safe right now. Is there another thing we can do? And let's explore those other possibilities. And when you're 18, right, then you could go for that or something along those lines. But it's also exploring like, okay, let's say it was something that they want to try sword swallowing, right? And you're like, I don't know if I want to do sword. I was a weird kid. You know, like, I don't know if that's a really wise option to do because here's some, you know, we can look at the research, see what other things, but I see like that stuff. Let's see what else we can do that when you're 18 and you choose to do that, great. But let's see what else we can have. So you're giving them options, but you're not judging them for having that. And I think that's a big
one. Got it. Yes. Because that phrase, like, you know, this is my house and these are my rules. And when you have your own house, you can have your own rules. There's a certain attitude behind that.
100%.
Right? And we all pick up on that quiet attitude, right? Our kids pick up on it very much so. And so it really, this is why the say what you see is so important. Right. To actually get on their team, right? Get in their head. Like you said, get them seen and understood.
Yeah.
Because they actually feel like you're on their team. They know that you're on their team and there's a completely different energy. There's a completely different attitude that they're picking up on, you know?
So that's huge. It reminds me of when I was teaching. It was taught to us back in college and then in the classroom itself of use your I statements. I feel this way. I see this way, right? As opposed to you did this or you made me feel. It's no, I feel this way, right? So you're using I statements so that you're saying your thoughts, your feelings without judging them, without throwing the blame or other stuff right on the other person. So their walls come up, but also it's more of that less judgment or no judgment zone, which is huge. And I will say that, you know, just talking through this, I'm replaying scenarios in my head of what through my past and how I've changed and adjusted this, that it's uncomfortable doing this at first. Right. When you started to change your approach to your kids, to coworkers, your spouse, to people in general, when you start doing more of this language of listening, it's uncomfortable because it's
messy.
Right. It's messy.
Messy. Yes.
And that's okay. Right. I want to make sure that that's okay to feel that
100%, way. 100%. You're literally building new mental pathways. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's going to take time to really figure out what works for you. And it's going to take time for you to really accept your likes and dislikes and accept yourself. If you've lived, you know, I mean, I lived 40 years not really accepting myself because of the way that I was raised. And when I started learning all this and it started to change me, I mean, I didn't really have a connection to my identity before I started language of listening. I mean, I did a little bit. We talk about something called no plan B. You know, like where do the no plan B's in your life show up? Because that really shows you when you were able to connect in your life to like who you are and what you really, really, truly want. And I really needed to connect to my no plan B's. And then, but just like, I didn't really know what my opinion was on stuff and I couldn't stand up and speak my opinion. I could stand up and speak my parents' opinions.
Right.
You know, and my teachers would be like, I was great at standing up and speaking up that stuff, but like, what did I actually think? Mm. What did I actually believe? And so being able to get connected to that, you know, it takes time because you're undoing, probably decades, you know, things. And you really are recreating new mental pathways. And it takes time for the new mental pathways to become the default ones, right? The ones that happen, you know, without having to think about it. We often slip back into the not having to think about crap. Ones that we don't want to have anymore. Yeah. So yeah, it's okay for it to be messy. It's okay for it to be uncomfortable. It's definitely going to be that way. And soon it just starts to feel so good. Decisions become so much less exhausting. Right. It just becomes so easy to make decisions when you're truly connected to your identity, to your likes and dislikes. Yeah.
That is very true from my standpoint. And this has been a phenomenal discussion. Okay. I lied. I have one last question. And, and then we'll call it a day for this. I want to be respectful of your time. The question is this. I'm all about helping people live their lives to the max. So if you could give one tip to help a person live their lives to the max, get the most out of life, what would that be?
Yeah, just trust yourself. Just trust yourself with with nothing holding that self-trust back, because you are amazing and you really, really can rely on yourself and trust yourself, and that will take you everywhere.
Oh my goodness. I absolutely love that. Rose, this has been phenomenal. Oh my gosh. I have goosebumps just thinking about everything we covered, from boundaries and the examples of the red cup, blue cup example, to disappointment and how to work through that for ourselves, for our kids, for other people in our lives. This conversation is going to change lives. I'm very confident in that. And just thank you so much for sharing your love, your wisdom with me and with all of the Energizers here. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
How can people connect with you and work with you if they're interested?
Yeah. So the place I'm most active is actually my Facebook group. Mm-hmm. It's called Love the Way You Parent. So if you get on Facebook and search Love the Way You Parent, don't go to my business page. I barely post on there. Really active in my group. You can also find me on Instagram at Love the Way You Parent, with dots in between the words. And my website is afteraces.com, AFTERACES.com. And you can go to /love the way you parent to learn how to work with me.
Oh my goodness. That's awesome. Everyone go to her Facebook group, go follow her on Instagram, do what you can to surround yourself with this amazing woman. This, the positivity, the energy, the wisdom that she shares is absolutely phenomenal. So check her out, make sure you do that. And of course, like this episode. Actually, I'm going to challenge you, Energizers. If you found something that resonated with you, I would love it if you messaged me and Rose and let us know a takeaway you had about this episode. So with that, Rose, thank you so much. I appreciate you more than you know. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed this, Spencer. Thanks for having me.
Of course, this was phenomenal. And Energizer, thank you for being you. Keep shining your beautiful light. Hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss a single episode. And I can't wait to see you in the next one. So until then, I'll catch you later.